introduce our next presenter. Kara?
Yes.
Kara Young. Dr. Young is currently a postdoctoral research fellow at the Vanderbilt University School of Nursing. She's clinically trained as a family nurse practitioner. She's passionate about developing a program of interdisciplinary, community-based research that provides the foundation for primary and secondary prevention interventions that can be implemented in clinical, school, and community settings, including healthcare homes, I hope.
Anywhere that'll take us. Well, thank you very much for attending this afternoon, and I'm very pleased to be following Sarah because I feel like what you've presented in terms of epidemiology for Washington State and just the prevalence, widespread prevalence of both emotional problems and behavioral problems really fits in with why I'm so passionate about this area. As a primary care provider, I obviously am interested in keeping our adolescents as healthy as possible because, as we know, the behaviors that are implemented and solidified during adolescence predict adult health outcomes. And so if we want to improve the health of society, we really need to start in adolescence. So this specific project that I am presenting here today is examining the effects of rumination and worry on the development of anxiety symptoms in adolescents that are experiencing stress, a fairly common phenomenon in adolescents. I have no financial conflicts to disclose. Let's put some numbers in terms of national prevalence to these different types of disorders. Almost one quarter, one in four almost, U.S. youth, by the time they reach age 18, are reporting that they have had meet the criteria for a mental health disorder with significant impairment. So by the age of 18, almost one in four youth has had a very significant problem. Anxiety disorders, almost one-third of children and adolescents have experienced an anxiety disorder by age 18. The prevalence decreases slightly, but what we do know is that pediatric health conditions that have received substantial public health attention, such as asthma and diabetes, pale in comparison in terms of the prevalence rates. Not to say that pediatric asthma or diabetes are not major public health problems, which they are, and we've done a great job, I feel like, of addressing those, and now it's time to really focus on mental health as a public health problem. We also know that these problems... I'm talking to the right room, right? Sometimes... we also know, as Sarah's presented, that these disorders do not exist in silos. We see extremely common comorbidity, particularly between anxiety and depression, both symptoms and disorders. That same study that I just presented on the previous slide found that of the youth that reported significant impairment in one disorder also reported a second disorder. 40% of them reported a second disorder, and mood disorders were the most commonly co-occurring. So I feel like it is extremely important to identify common vulnerability factors. There's something that needs to be explained because of this common co-occurrence. And so I have looked specifically towards rumination as that potential underlying mechanism. I'll give you a little bit of background in terms of how I got here. My dissertation was a cross-sectional analysis where I looked at a diathesis stress framework specifically for depressive symptoms. I measured three common cognitive vulnerabilities that are found in the literature, and rumination was the only unique predictor and predicted 68% of the variance in depressive symptoms in these kids. So, huge number, and really took me back to the literature to read even more about rumination. What I found were other disorders popping up, eating disorders, substance use disorders, anxiety disorders, and mixed anxiety and depressive disorders. So I began to think, well, if this is perhaps that common underlying factor, what a great advance it would be if we could just focus then on that vulnerability, on reversing those ruminative thoughts. Maybe we could make a difference not only in depression, but in anxiety and substance use eating disorders, etc. So for my postdoc, what I've done is to do a longitudinal pilot study where I am extending the results of my dissertation, but I also have added in measures of anxiety and then worry, because in the literature, worry is proposed to be more related to anxiety symptoms than depression, and rumination is specifically linked with depression. So it was important for me to include both measures of worry and anxiety to see then what the unique contributions of each of those were to anxiety symptoms in these youth. Oh, and then just to point out, too, obviously they are extremely similar in their conceptualizations, but are distinct. Worry has more of a, is the reason it's proposed to be more related to anxiety symptoms is that it's got this future orientation, worrying about what might happen, whereas rumination is conceptualized as an inability to distract from negative thoughts and feelings of things that have occurred in the past. So as I have said, the purpose of this analysis that I'm presenting here is to examine the relationships among stressful life events, worry, ruminations, and symptoms of anxiety, and then to examine the unique contribution of stressful life events, worry, and rumination to the symptoms of anxiety. This specific analysis is a cross-sectional analysis of baseline scores that I collected, as I said, as a part of a prospective longitudinal pilot study. The data was collected in the adolescent homes. It was a community-based recruitment method. I passed out flyers in schools as well as community groups, after-school programs, and things of that nature in a predominantly rural area. They were English-speaking adolescents, and I had in this pilot study 41 adolescents in this baseline sample. I used four very well-validated standardized measures to assess the study variables. First were the stressful life events that captured negative life events within four domains. The negative life events related to the family, romantic relationships, schools, and friends. Then ruminative response style with the ruminative responses scale. The Penn State Worry Questionnaire assessed worry, and then Beck's Anxiety Inventory. Used pretty basic analyses, which obviously we'd like a larger sample size in the future, but just to get some preliminary, this was a feasibility pilot also to help do some hypothesis generation. So I used some descriptive statistics. We looked just at the correlations between these variables and then used linear regression modeling to control for each variable to determine the unique contribution of each variable to our outcome variable of anxiety symptoms. The sample was slightly more male than female. I had more 11 and 12-year-olds that bought in or contacted me back. The majority of the 13 to 15-year-olds, it was fortuitous, they were older siblings of the younger kids who were interested. And so I would come with my research material and my Walmart gift cards, and the older kids wanted to participate as well. So that was an exciting finding, too, because as I move on and move this into a larger study, I believe that looking at the sibling pairs and these vulnerabilities and even perhaps the outcome variables as well to see if there are any similarities or within those groupings. Rural Tennessee is predominantly Caucasian, and that we did have 53% Caucasian in this sample. There were 20% African American, and then the 27% other were all one parent Caucasian and one parent African American. The sample was extremely economically disadvantaged. They all fell in the two lowest SES classes, and that is representative of the population from which they were sampled. It's an extremely underserved and economically under low income area, I should say. Mainly just want to point out here that the stressful life events is a checklist. Has this event occurred to you in the previous 3 months? I use it as a continuous variable because within each of the domains you add up the yes responses and you get that continuous variable there. And then the Cronbach alpha for the other, even though it was a small sample, were all acceptable. So in terms of the correlations, I first want to draw your attention just to the intercorrelations among the stressful life events. As expected, they are all highly correlated. So the first column there is the total number of stressful life events, and then within each of the domains, all very statistically significant and quite robust correlations. Then in terms of the two diathesis or the vulnerabilities, both rumination and worry were statistically significantly associated with all of the domains of stressful life events. And then interestingly, anxiety was statistically significantly correlated with the total number of stressful life events, so the cumulative effect of stressful life events. Stressful events within the romantic relationship domain, and then stressful events within the school domain. Then in terms of looking at the vulnerabilities, rumination and worry, all statistically significant here in terms of having those be related to the anxiety symptoms. In the regression model, the first step, I added the personal characteristics of age and gender. And as you can see, there was no statistically significant ability of these two variables to explain any of the variance in anxiety symptoms. The second step, I added the stressful life events, specifically each domain, to see if there was any unique contribution from either one of these domains to anxiety symptoms. And although none of them were uniquely predictive, it did increase the ability of the model to explain variance in anxiety symptoms, though it trended towards significance but was not statistically significant. So for the third step, I added in the two vulnerability factors, rumination and worry. And as you can see, this final model did reach statistical significance and explained approximately 47% of the variance in anxiety symptoms in these adolescents. The only unique predictor, though, was rumination, explaining approximately 27% of the total 47% variance in the anxiety symptoms. A little surprising, I really was expecting it to be worry, or perhaps them both to be uniquely predictive, but it's that rumination that's popping up again. So these are very preliminary findings, but these preliminary baseline findings suggest this unique role of rumination in the development of anxiety symptoms, or at least in the presence of anxiety symptoms, something that we need to consider. The overall model explained 47% of the variance, so rumination is not the only answer here. It's not the only ticket. The overall model in terms of evaluating stressful life events also increased our explanatory power in terms of being able to explain why these anxiety symptoms exist. Very small sample size. This was a cross-sectional analysis, and the rural sample limits the generalizability to urban and suburban populations. But as I stated this morning, rural adolescents are quite underrepresented in the literature, so I think this is important work and work that needs to be continued, because the stressors that rural adolescents face may look very different than suburban and urban. Poor people do not just exist in cities. We have very, very poor rural areas of this country, and they are underserved in terms of health service providers, but specifically mental health service providers. And so coming from a primary care perspective, I feel like one, it's my job to help primary care providers start talking more about mental health, because it falls into our arena to focus on these things, because there just aren't the mental health service providers available in these areas. This needs to be a longitudinal study, and I have conducted two more time points across 6 months, and that is too short for the next study. We certainly need to extend that time period. We're looking to capture developmentally sensitive issues over time. 6 months is not long enough to see significant changes in depressive symptoms, and so we need to increase the either number of assessment or at least length of time between assessments. I would love to have a wider age range where we look really, psychology is great at defining adolescence as the second decade of life. So One of the drawbacks of our standardized measures is that a lot of times they will be standardized for adolescents, meaning 12 to 18 years age. So if you'd like to get at the younger kids, you run into a problem with measurement, because they are young. But we really, if we're looking at preventing these types of disorders, we need to start well before they begin. So that 10 to 20 age range would be perfect. I would love to have increased diversity, definitely racial and ethnic diversity in these samples, and then utilize urban and suburban samples as well so that we can compare these variables across these different populations. And then another limitation of this study is that I've used all self-report measures. It would be fantastic if I could use interview data specifically for stressful life events. That's a very rich type of phenomenon where saying, yes, this happened to me doesn't capture how distressing it was for the adolescent. So, yes, they might have had a fight with their friend, but it might not have bothered them one iota. The whole next day, they were completely over it, whereas someone else might have been extremely distressed by that negative event. So interview methods would be much better to capture that type of information. So in closing, I think that this well-documented link between rumination and depressive symptoms may suggest an underlying mechanism that could partially explain the common comorbidity with anxiety symptoms as well as some of these other disorders. And I think that this rumination as a common underlying mechanism has very important public health implications, not just for primary care, because we can certainly do some things there, but on a broader setting to suggest interventions, as my bio said, in multiple different arenas. And then I've got some references and questions.
Yes. Can I also finish a little early if we have some updating a few questions now?
Two questions. One, I assume I'm no longer clinically practicing, so I assume you can tell us, are there best practices for addressing rumination? That's the first question. And then second, looking at sort of fundamental causes or root causes, have you thought about the underlying factors that might be connected to rumination, i.e. under the adverse childhood experiences, we found that a lot of the issues around obesity that Kaiser group Bloody found were related to sexual abuse at earlier ages. So you're looking at 10-year-olds. So those two questions.
Definitely. One, no, rumination is not really talked about. There are best practices in terms of screening. The United States Preventive Services Task Force now recommends routine screening of all adolescents 12 to 18 years of age for major depressive disorder when adequate systems are in place to ensure appropriate follow-up. I don't have the numbers in terms of how much that's actually happening in a primary care setting. But there are no current protocols to look specifically at the thinking style of rumination in primary care. Anytime I present in a healthcare setting, it's always very eye opening for practitioners. Even I presented recently at a community based psychology program, and they were blown away. It was not something that they had thought of before, but as they were thinking about the clients that they work with, they had all sorts of examples of, oh yeah, I can see that in my client, that certainly happens. So I think, coming from a nursing background, where I hope to go with this as well as also incorporating some of this into nursing education, because you have to educate providers before they go out, because once they're out there in the field working, having them, I don't know if anyone has worked to try to change healthcare providers' behaviors, but it is extremely difficult. You get into a routine, you have so many things that are competing for your attention, that mental health is just one of those things that's challenging to deal with. It lengthens the time of the visit extremely, it makes it extremely lengthy, and so a lot of times providers will shy away from it. So I think in closing, if we could focus or teach, here's this one specific thinking style, focus, if you notice this, if you identify this, focus on changing that. Maybe, you know, if we can give them strategies that can be briefly implemented, I think we're going to go a lot further in terms of actually changing practice. In terms of early adverse childhood events, there is minimal research looking at how these vulnerabilities develop. I know definitely with sexual abuse, but just maltreatment in general. So I think any effective intervention really should incorporate, it's going to need to be a family intervention. You're not always going to get an entire family, even if it's just one parent and adolescent, to participate, but you should try, and then if that parent is not engaged, perhaps if you can engage the adolescent, and then that adolescent can go back into the home and maybe try to practice some techniques to help, whether it's reducing the negative thought processes or specifically rumination. I think, hopefully that would make a difference there.
All right, any other questions? Hold on a little bit.